The next case is 95-2341, State of Ohio versus Anthony Wilson.
May I please record?
Mr. Slager, wait if I call on you, please. I think Mr. Lapp would like to have his pencil out farther than he started. Okay, Ms. Lager.
May I please record, counsel? The issue in this case involves two enactments passed in May of 1994 that altered the assault statute 29/13. These enactments that were passed within 2 days of each other by the General Assembly. The first amendment substitute Senate Bill number 116 made assault on police officer felony 43, and that is effective date of September 29, 1994. The second amended substitute House Bill number 571 making changes in the law dealing with Department of Corrections and employees had an effective date of October 10, 1994, so 11 days apart. This requested application of 29, 1.52B of the Ohio Revised Code. These amendments do not refer to each other. Under 1.52B, the amendments have been harmonized to the effective date. Lower court in this case did not harmonize these provisions because officially held that the repealing clause of 571 prohibited doing so.
Well, let me stop you there because it seems to me that the argument, your argument, and particularly the argument of Legislative Service Commission asks us to look at legislation that is clear on its face, as the Court of Appeals did here, and give effect to it without all this sort of, I don't know what I call it, machinations, but golly, if we did what the Legislative Service Commission wants us to do here, we'd be second-guessing the legislature, it seems to me, royally, lack of a better word. I just don't understand how we would take a statute and I understand what the problem is here, but it seems to me it can be easily corrected by the legislature just putting some words in one of the statutes, can it?
The Ohio Constitution requires that no bill should have more than one purpose. Only have one stated purpose. These two bills could not have been combined in the same session.
Well, then a separate bill, perhaps. I mean, there's a way to do this without asking the Supreme Court to say, well, when you repealed a statute, you didn't really repeal it.
That's why 1.52B was enacted. That did this situation specifically. The only thing the legislature could have done differently is waited until 116 was signed into law and put into effect before it passed 5.
I want to ask that. I guess the signing of the legislation of the two bills by the governor was not coordinated in such a way as to make. I forget now. I had this written down how it could have been done, but it could have been done in such a way that the one law would not have been in effect when the governor signed the other one, which would have alleviated the problem, I think. But that wasn't, I think that wasn't done.
My understanding was that the only way this could have changed if 571 would have included the language of 116, the only way that could have been done is waiting for the governor to sign it into law and then include the language of 116 in 571. Ohio Constitution requires that. If you're going to repeal something, you have to put it in. Whatever language you're repealing, whatever language you're redacting, according to the Constitution, has to be included in the new bill. The language was included in the new bill in this case, so 1.52
how do you make, even under 1.52, the word repeal not mean repeal?
That's substance, isn't it?
Because that's in there. It says it is hereby repealed.
Repealed only language prior to 115 is the only language it refers to.
It just says that that section of the code is repealed.
Let
me ask you this. Do I remember someplace or other that the legislature has corrected this now, as the Chief Justice suggested they could do? Haven't they made an assault on a police officer a felony?
Yes, Chair, there's been a bill, too, they have. It does not make the issue
move
for several reasons.
So you know where I'm going with that.
Yes, I do. First of all, there are many cases being held in abeyance in Hamilton County and other counties in the state, pending the court's decision in the case.
How do you know that?
I've had phone calls. Yes, I have.
That many assaults on police officers?
Yes, Your Honor. During that specific time period, the trial court's awaiting for the court's decision in this case.
Okay, but before you leave that, then, why don't we just maybe, you probably allow this, leave this only as the law in the first district, doesn't affect the other districts, and the legislature has now changed it. Issue's over.
Because this doesn't only happen, and this is not an aberration, it happens all the time. These types of bills are passed this way all the time.
Is that right?
Yes. Are you telling the General Assembly they can only pass one bill within one session?
No, no, I'm not telling the General Assembly anything, but what I am telling you is I've been here almost 12 years, and this is the first time I've seen it. If it happens all the time, I haven't seen it.
It happened in State versus Houston, and in that case, State versus Houston, Montgomery County Court of Appeals was dealing with a criminal statute 3719.141. It had no problem. The exact same situation happened. It had no problem. The court had no problem applying 1.52B. In that case, there was a repealing clause, as there always is, as the High Constitution requires it.
What's the citation for State v. Houston? Is that 84 Ohio Appellate 3rd?
Yes.
Doesn't say Ohio State, does it?
Yes.
Is that different?
But that there's my proof that it has happened so previously. And Senate Bill 2 has also changed the law in regards to other statutes and not dealt with prior amendments to that statute. So it does happen regularly. The Ohio Constitution requires there to be a repealing law. You can't say that they're irreconcilable.
So that means we would have to go through the entire workers' comp statute that the General Assembly has made major revisions in the last 3 years, and we'd have to be sure that they are reconcilable or not reconcilable, looking at each individual bill rather than applying the statute that's been given to us.
The only way they would be irreconcilable is the substance of them conflict, not if the repealing clause. The repealing clause in and of itself does not make them irreconcilable. If the issue is in front of this court, definitely you have to look at it to determine are these two provisions irreconcilable with substance.
Okay, without being argumentative, because I don't mean to be picking on you, isn't it fair to say that most of the bills that we see, specifically, even all the way back to when I was a city councilman, if we wanted to enact something, we said, this much is hereby repealed, and we had to put it all in. Then we said, it is repealed. Enacted in its place is this. Isn't that what we generally see?
Yes.
Is that what happened here?
Yes. Because they were dealing at the time with the statute prior to 116.
Okay, and they said it is repealed.
They said the version prior to 116 is repealed. They did not deal with the language of 116 because it was not law at the time. They could only repeal what was law at the time. Now I'm not saying repealing clause takes effect after the effect of today's statute. That's not my argument. But what it did was repeal the version prior to 116.
So it repealed what wasn't law.
It repealed what was law prior to 116.
Thank you, Ms. Laker.
I would like to
thank you, Mr. Lapp.
brief to us, the people who drafted all this over at the LSC says it's perfectly clear, and for us to do anything else, we'd be dummies.
Well, I respect and disagree with that proposition. A repeal is a repeal, and that's something that's entirely missed, I think, by the state and by the Legislative Service Commission in this argument. This court in Cox versus the Department of Transportation some years ago, which is a case, interestingly enough, cited by both the state and the Amicus Legislative Service Commission, held that an express repeal of the precise kind we have here takes effect on the effective date of the legislation of which that express repeal is a part. That was our argument before the Hamilton County Court of Appeals, and it was that argument that the court agreed in reversing the disposition of the trial court, which entered judgment of conviction on a fourth degree felony. Now, the state has presented a contrary decision of the Lorain County Court of Appeals in the Boardman case, which was decided in August. It's an unreported decision of that court, which is contrary to the Wilson case. And I'd like to address that decision because it's the one bit of authority that the state has presented that I think merits a response, a serious response. The Boardman case never considered the principle of Cox decision, which holds that an express repeal is a part of and takes effect on the date of the effective date of the legislation of which it's a part. Quarterman never discusses the Cox case, never considers that rule. Even most astonishing about the Quarterman case is the following language which is contained in that decision. And this is a direct quote from page 4 of the unreported decision. It says the repealer language, referring to the repealer language in House Bill 116, or 571, does not unambiguously command the extinction of that portion of RC 2903.13, which is not in the later enacted statute. Now that sentence, I submit, is a primer on how a statute, particularly a criminal statute, should not be read. The message is very clear. Let the citizen beware. The law is as it will later be determined to be. There is nothing on which you can rely.
Counsel?
I don't think that's the law in the land of Lincoln and never has.
Counsel, do you concede, maybe you don't, that legislature intended to make assaulting a police officer a felony, but they went about it wrong?
No, Your Honor, I do not make that concession, because I think it's impossible to determine what was in the minds of hundreds of legislators who acted from any number of unknown motives. I just don't believe that we can make that conclusion, particularly in a case where, as here, the language, the statutory text itself is as unambiguous as statutory text can be.
So your position is that they are not written out?
The repeal has to be taken as an express repeal. Now, there's some discussion in the Legislative Services Commission in the Amicus brief that this is a repeal by implication. And I submit nothing could be further from the truth. If this is not an express repeal, there is no such thing as an express repeal. And to the extent that there are any repeals at all, they're only by implication. The language is very clear. Existing section 2903.13 is hereby repealed. And that's the statute under which my client was convicted of a felony and sentenced to a term in the state performance board.
But the amicus brief says it was, this is the kind of language that was used for my previous comment. All it was simply amended 2903.13 to modernize the name Penal Reformatory Institution to Correctional Institution. And if we look at anything else, the brief goes on and says, in at least three places that I noted, the court really doesn't know what it's doing. Isn't that what that brief says?
I think that's the suggestion. I think that's also the suggestion in the bill that the legislature passed.
interest in the last thing you said, that there was a subsequent enactment after all of this happened. Okay. And it made some express reference to the Court of Appeals decision.
No, I'm talking about an entirely
separate bill. If they just came back and reenacted this to...
Wasn't that 614?
That's correct.
To deal with the problem, as you articulated it, that's one thing. Is that what they did?
No, this is a separate bill that was introduced in the Ohio legislature while this case was pending in this court,
right?
After the decision of the First District Court of Appeals, which, if I may be so blunt, amounts pretty much to a brief filed by the legislature in the form of the legislative act. The bill goes so far as to say that this, that the court ignored the RC 1.52b. The problem is, statutes are not written in vacuum. They do apply to human beings. And the legislature here and the state seem to have forgotten that very fundamental fact about the law.
Well, but to answer Justice Piper's question, go back to it directly, he is correct, I think, in the amicus brief. Footnote 2 on page 8 very clearly says, due to the dangerous legislative implications of the appellate court's decision in Wilson and its complete failure to recognize the binding operation and the intent of the General Assembly, so on. 614 was introduced to the General Assembly to refute the decision of the appellate court in Wilson. That's what it says.
That's what the title of the bill says, to refute the decision. First District Court of Appeals, insofar as the decision failed to take judicial notice of the harmonized version. That's strong language.
It's very strong language.
That's unusual language, I think.
It's fundamentally crossed.
This bill didn't pass, I assume, right? It got introduced and probably never got referred to committee. Did it pass?
It passed.
Passed both houses?
It did.
Signed by the governor?
It was.
Shows what I know.
But the bill is really what this case is all about. It's the confusion of the separation of powers. The court of appeals read the statutory test as it was enacted and reached the correct result. It held 1.52b is not to be applicable. It didn't reach any number of other issues that I raised in my brief in this court and I raised in the Court of Appeals, most particularly the import of RC 1.58B, which holds that a reenactment, amendment, or repeal of a statute does not do certain things except if the penalty or punishment for any offense is reduced by the reenactment or the amendment. The penalty or punishment, if not already imposed, it wasn't here, shall be imposed according to the statute as amended. This is a fairly familiar rule that the defendant gets the benefit of any subsequent changes in the law that reduce the terms of the sentence. But that in itself, without consideration of the harmonization issue in this case,
doesn't the worthy adversary make a legitimate point, though, when she says that the repeal language in 614 was not repealing the one that was passed 2 days before because it was not yet enacted?
Cox deals with that issue, Your Honor. It says that a repeal is effective on the date of the legislation of which it's a part. The repealing language here became effective only when that part of the statute, which eliminated the language about police officer assaults, itself became effective.
Do you seriously contend that they passed a statute which, as I read the Act 116, says to make the offense of assault a first-degree felony if the victim is a peace officer? That's a pretty clear statement of their intent. And then 2 days later, repeal it? Do you seriously believe that was the intent of the legislature? That's what you're arguing?
I don't think that's the issue in the case, Your Honor.
Well, that's the issue we have to deal with. If we're supposed to harmonize, we have to look at what the intent was in the passing of the two bills. If we're supposed to do any harmonizing at all, otherwise, why harmonize?
They're fundamentally incapable of harmonization, given that you have a decreased share. And the facts and the language itself, the statutory text.
Isn't the issue that when the General Assembly repeals a statute, whether they did it by mistake or whatever, the public is on notice that it's not for, I mean, this is, we can harmonize if we want to, but defense counsel can't, trial courts aren't likely to, and the individual isn't likely. They're going to look at the statute and say, well, the General Assembly, for some reason, 2 days later, they repealed the statute. They've done stranger things than that, I mean, for good reason. I'm not criticizing, but for good reason. They'll change their mind. And why should somebody have to try to figure out and harmonize, so-called harmonize, a statute when the General Assembly has said it, and it's up to them to say if they didn't intend that. I mean, they can do that. Isn't that your strongest argument?
That's exactly.
Sure, we can. Lawyers and judges can harmonize, but the point is the public needs to be on notice. They need to be able to look at a statute, and if it says it's repealed, to them it's repealed.
This case is a perfect example. We have a Wilson court. We have a Foreman court. Each of which have reached different results. The Wilson court said, to say that these two enactments are reconcilable is judicial neo-scholasticism. That's right out of the court's opinion. The Foreman says they're easily reconcilable. How is the man on the street going to reconcile the statutes under circumstances such as this? It's impossible. It can't be done. With the single exception of the Houston case, which Ms. Lager referred to in her portion of the argument, virtually every decision that I've reviewed concerning the application of 1.52b is a civil suit, not a criminal case. To my knowledge, this court has never considered 1.52b in the context of a criminal case. And I think that's for a good reason. The reason that it's never come up before is because it's a rather remarkable proposition that people on the street are supposed to become all-of-the-mental-formal and make every conceivable legal distinction that takes 3 years of legal education and then some.
Well, I guess my point is that it's easy for us that we want to harmonize this. We can harmonize it away, but that's a principle we've established for all the legislation. That's my point, that how to, the next case comes along and it's not a solid police officer, it's somebody else, it's something else that doesn't have all the public interest and emotion going with it, and now we have the same problem where LSC simply didn't, for whatever reason, they used the boilerplate language. That's what happened here. They inserted boilerplate language like they always do. And somebody didn't catch the fact, apparently, or they caught it, and they took the risk that this wouldn't happen, I guess. Seems to me that's what this case is about.
That's correct, and this is by no means the only such case of its kind that this court is likely to see. There presently are two different versions of a theft of a firearm in the state of Ohio. The Anderson Publishing Company have eliminated that fits in its currently reported version of the theft statute. Banks Baldwin, on the other hand, has undergone the mechanics of reconciliation between three different enactments that have taken place in the course of the last 12 months and has, in essence, done its own reconciliation. Now that's a very troublesome thought, that law is not made by the legislature, but by some mystic process of reconciliation by persons who are unaccountable to the public at large.
That's called book publishers, right?
Or a book publisher, or any publisher. We believe that the decision of the Court of Appeal should be affirmed in all respects. And I thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Lapp. Ms. Laker, you saved almost 6 minutes of your time. It's an unusual happenstance here. You heard my speech, Ms. Laker. What's your response to it?
As to the notice issue, Your Honor, it's not as if the legislature created a new offense. What they did is they enhanced the penalty for assault. Any person is on notice that biting the stomach of a police officer is a criminal offense. And no one needs to be on a notice that they will spend, instead of 6 months in the criminal justice center, they will spend 6 months in the Ohio Penitentiary.
Well, But the principle here is much more important to me than, I guess, than this case, and that is if we take legislation where the General Assembly has said we repeal X bill, how do we, I mean, what's the process for deciding, for not coming to the Supreme Court, but what's the process for a person to decide what the General Assembly really meant? Do we say, well, this bill was passed 2 days after another bill, and so surely they didn't mean to repeal it already? Well, surely they may have. I mean, why should there be a guessing game on something that is such a clear statement of intent? Whether it's a mistake or not, that's for the General Assembly to fix, it seems to me. And it could have been prevented here. Let's be candid. There's a way to do it, and they simply didn't do it. And so now we're faced with this trying to harmonize a repealing provision of a statute and to try to guess that the General Assembly didn't really mean that. Well, maybe in this case we can assume they didn't, because why would they want to go back and reduce the penalty for assault on a police officer? That's counterintuitive. But another statute, it may not be counterintuitive. Yet you may really wonder, did the General Assembly intend to repeal the statute? And they may have. They may have good reason to do it. That's the issue in the case to me, the legal issue in the case to me.
1.52 is enacted to cover the situation.
I think 1.52 is to cover the situation where one bill says that the penalty for a crime will be 3 to 5 years. Another one says the penalty for a crime will be, and it's stated a little differently, will be 4 to 6 years. And now we've got substance of two bills, and they're not the same, and so we're supposed to reconcile those. I think that's different than where the General Assembly uses boilerplate language and says this bill is repealed.
But the Ohio Constitution requires, in every case, in every legislation that's passed, there has to be a repealing clause. So this happens with every legislation. So you could never use 1.52b if that logic follows.
You don't think the General Assembly here could have, I'm not telling how to do it, but could have made it clear that they did not intend that 116 or the 571 intended to repeal the penalty provision of 116. There was no way for them to do that.
At the time when 571 was passed, 116 had been passed but had not been signed into law, so they didn't know what the law was going to be at that time. If you want to know what the legislative intent was on this issue, you have to look at Senate Bill 2. Section 7, Senate Bill 2, says that it refers specifically to 2903.13 and refers specifically to 571 and 116, and says that that these are the new language from either of the acts is shown in capital letters. In Senate Bill 2, they did not treat these two as irreconcilable. They treated them as reconcilable. Given 1.5...
Counsel, the legislature has a computer, right? The whole system is computerized, and it's set up to track this kind of thing. What happened is that they just happened to fire this little LSC language bill through too fast, and somebody didn't check. I mean, they could have very well said, in this particular area, cross-referenced, as they found the way to do when they did this 614, the other bill that had passed but has not been, I mean, they could put all that language
in. The bill was passed, but it was not law.
Well, they could refer to that and say it's passed, but it's on the governor's desk, and here's what we intend to do about that. They can do all of that. They sure found a way to do it in 614. They just goofed, didn't they?
No, Your Honor, they complied completely with the Ohio Constitution. What completely what the Ohio Constitution requires them to do. The only thing they could have done differently is perhaps pass them in a greater amount of time.
If you say mechanically they couldn't have, they could have waited a few days for this innocuous language bill to pass. They have a way to know that what bills are signed by the government.
I would also note that the decision in this case leads to deceptive legislative practices. I would refer to the amicus brief on that issue. I would like for you to look at that because the way that the legislature deals with certain bills, the enactment of a second bill may have effect on the act.
Thank you, Ms. Laker. The case is submitted. You will be advised of our opinion.